Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
We are tonight's entertainment.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of Camp Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at Another MMA Cast. Of course, as always, we are brought to you by the Amp Radio Network. Tonight, I am once again lucky enough to be joined by a good friend in the Calgary Sun and Herald, at DannyAustin_9. Of course, that's Danny Austin. And of course, as I was saying, last night's show, Mr. Austin had requested this show. He's got a few things to get off his chest, so we might get a few hot topics. Danny Austin, let's bring him in. Danny, how are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good. I got a little bit of a head cold, so like feeling good talking to you. Feeling not so good otherwise, but life is good. It's been a weird couple days, I feel, for those of us in this little bubble of ours. But it's good to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you're more than welcome. And as I said at the top, when you DM'd me directly after the press conference saying I need to get on the show, I said, of course, let's get that done. So let me run down tonight's topics for the audience, Danny, real quick. First of all, we're going to start with what's up with Dana White. Secondly, we're going to go into why is the UFC no longer interested in being where the best fight the best. And maybe we'll get into some other things if we have enough time, because that first topic that I had said what's up with Dana White might take a little bit of time, because that guy's been popular on the Twitterverse quite recently with running his mouth. He's back to his old tricks.
Yeah, but like, can I ask you a question?
So where do you want to start, Danny? Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Let's start that, because I mean, are they his old tricks? Like, I mean, I know Dana's always, you know, likes to throw fighters under the bus, but like, I just couldn't believe
this first
conference. Yeah, like, and that's kind of,
you
know,
throwing the fighters under the bus.
Yeah, and like, I'm trying to just kind of real quick throw on a sweater and get outside here, because I'm not sure my phone is perfect now, but I think we both had a couple drinks, and you know, you and I chat through our DMs and on Facebook and stuff throughout the week, so you got a little bit of an idea where I'm coming from. But like, the tone's changed, man, and like, as I was sitting there just listening to him. And you know, I've always been one of those guys who's kind of thought like you take the good with the bad with Dana, and I just couldn't handle hearing him just throw fighter after fighter under the bus. And, you know, I think that those two topics you named are sort of the same, because you were like, why isn't the UFC interested in, you know, being where the best fight? And I'm sure that it contributes a little bit for some of these guys knowing that if they act in their own best interest, and that doesn't line perfectly with what the UFC wants, they're just going to get ripped by the most powerful man in the sport.
Yeah, it's crazy, because, you know, like you said, at that press conference, you know, not only did he throw Demetrius Johnson, who he did call the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, directly under that bus, but he also threw his 135 champion, women's division, under the bus as well. I couldn't understand. I mean, how, moving forward, Danny, do you promote these guys, both this DJ and Amanda, after you've trashed them? I mean, we talked about this once before, but I mean, it's like he's trying to get that bad publicity, good publicity, all publicity is good publicity kind of thing going. But I don't know. Can you make heads or tails of it?
No, and, like, Okay, the Nunez thing bothered me because I think it's ridiculous, and I disagree with Dana, but it at least was within the news cycle where he had to say something about Amanda Nunez. And, like, I didn't like when he was throwing DJ under the bus a month or so ago and what have you, but, like, at the time, you know, it was a negotiation tactic at least, or, you know, I guess that's what he was trying to do, was put together the Dillashaw DJ fight. But what was the – I mean – sure. Dana, you basically win one way or another. Dana did that interview with John Morgan where he basically conceded, okay, you can fight Ray Borg. It was over. Why did he have to come back? And who does it help? I don't understand. Like, this is not a negotiation tactic, criticizing Demetrius Johnson at a press conference after what is supposed to be your biggest event of the year. It's just like there's a level where it just kind of seemed mean-spirited. And, you know, that's silly, you know? Like, we're all – these are all grown men, you know, they're all fighters. Certainly I'm not a fighter, but, you know, I'm sure DJ can take it. But, like, there was a level where I was just like, this is pointless to attack Demetrius Johnson at this point.
Yeah.
That fight is over. And it really bugged me. And then with Amanda, I, like, you know, I know there's a lot of debate on Twitter and I've seen, you know, there's a lot of hard feelings and I do feel bad for any fans who, you know, flew into Las Vegas specifically to see her fight or see some strength there. And I do understand that component of it where, like, it sucks just as a business decision to have a fighter pull out. But, I mean, I got a cold today. I probably would be medically cleared to fight. It's the last thing in the world I'd want to do. I feel bad for my editors having to read my stories. And, yeah, I still got to get it done. But, like, I don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line if I make a mistake. And Amanda does. And I, you know, she had a perfectly good explanation for it. I don't know. It's just the whole thing. Yeah. She was like, it was different. It's different Dana criticizing George St. Pierre, who, you know, after the Johnny Hendricks fight, you know, I didn't like that much either, but George St. Pierre has a huge, you know, audience, people who are going to support him. Like these two guys, like Amanda and DJ are stuck not being able to defend themselves. Really. DJ already did. It only made it worse. I hate it. That's what it comes down to. I was just so angry watching it.
Yeah, I dislike it as well. I like you said, it does seem pointless. I mean, why bring it back up again? You know, it's just strange. And not only that, but TJ Dillashaw brought it up in his interview that they had on the night as well. And I just thought, what ridiculousness, you know what I mean? It was a shot in the dark kind of fight anyways, you know what I mean? A guy coming down who's never made that weight before. Just why? Why set that up when you have the chance to glorify this young man who fights at 125 pounds and lift him up? Instead, you're trying to bury him underneath the ground. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And of course, like you said, you know, we feel for anybody that flew into Vegas to see Amanda Nunes and fight. Like, of course, our girl, Pandora Box, follow her on Twitter. Go ahead.
But you still got a great night of fights. I mean, like, it sucks. I don't want to take it. It sucks. You spent the money. I don't have to spend my money to go to these fights because I paid to cover them. It's insensitive for me to say anything other than it fully sucks for the fans and they have all my sympathy. But, like, all this bullshit about, oh, man, and Amanda was scared or this and that. Like, guys, no, she wasn't. Let's all be rational about this.
No.
I mean, like, fighters aren't scared of other fighters. That's not, like, a real thing that happens. It sucks, but it happened. No. And then this is the other thing. Then Dana does this whole thing where he's like, oh, well, I'll never let Nunez headline another fight. And then in the next sentence was like, well, yeah, looks like that'll be the headliner for Edmonton. Like,
right.
It's irrational. And if he's going to be the voice for the sport, which he has every right to be, and he's put in a ton of work, and, like, you know, he's in the position he's in for a reason. But if he's going to be that, then, like, is, you know, there's a level of responsibility that comes with that. And I just didn't feel it. I didn't feel like he was living up to that responsibility on Saturday night.
Yeah, I thought Ariel Helwani put it perfectly on Monday on his show. You know, you take a look at what happened when Matt Mitrione fell out of the Fedor fight and how he handled that. I mean, and that was, what, 3 hours before the fight? was supposed to go down.
Yeah.
This was 6 hours in the UFC. And then you look at Dana, and just to contrast the two reactions, it's just incredible.
It's I mean, I actually hadn't heard Helwani say that. And I mean, we can get on about the Helwani stuff from today too.
Well,
you know, if we want to get mad
yet.
About the UFC.
Not yet. We'll get into that in a second.
No. But I mean, it's just, it's weird. And the timing is weird because I think like everyone, we certainly felt at least going into up until Dallas, I feel like we can probably pretty confidently say that like felt like something was off with the schedule with the matchmakers and just with the UFC schedule. We had a bunch of events that were sort of underwhelming in a row. We had Jermaine Durandamy as the most forgettable, inexplicable champion. So it was a weird 2017. And then you had, like, I think that it was a pretty good June. You know, I think you had Kevin Lee kind of bust down the doors. You got a little future star probably on your hands there. You got Dana sitting at that press conference after 213, which, even though the main event fell apart, seemed like good vibes coming out of it. I mean, I don't know. You're more tapped into the fan community than I am. But it seems like people were pretty happy with the event. And then we've got...
Yeah, I didn't miss it.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, we had a great main event to talk about. And, like, fortunately, it seems like Whitaker and the inexplicably likable Yoel Romero. Don't know how that happened. I like the guy all of a sudden. Like, they both got a little bit of shine that I don't know that they would have otherwise got. But, like, it was a really good night. And then you're looking at a massive 214, just a really great card.
Yeah.
And
yeah, absolutely
a license to print money with Conor Floyd. So like, it's a pretty good summer after a pretty rough summer. And I was a little bit disappointed in the face of that we couldn't kind of like ride the good move, you know?
Yeah. No, I feel you. And it seems to be, I mean, Dana White went away for a little while there. What, a couple of years ago, maybe last year, the year before, he went away, and then all of a sudden he started to make a resurgence again and doing these sort of quick hitters at the press conference. I understand why he needed to come out. He needed to come out and speak about Amanda and what her problems were. And again, let's just, for everybody who was saying that she was scared, let's document it. It's well documented that Amanda Nunes has problems when she goes to Vegas with her, what are we officially calling it? Sinusitis or something like that? Danny, do you know
what
I'm talking about?
Term?
Right,
let's
exactly.
Just say what
okay.
You said. Sinusitis.
You're a pool man.
Sinusitis. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so is. Go ahead.
No. You keep going.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, it's well documented, and anybody that ever brings that up, that, you know, fighters are scared to fight fighters, I just stop listening to them. I just block them or mute them on the Twitter, because, I mean, that's just, like you said, it's just ridiculous. And it was unfortunate, and we had one of our contributors was actually on the ground and actually did return her ticket, which, of course, the UFC is legally bound to do if the main event falls out. So she did get her money back, or she will get her money back in a couple of days, because it does take a couple of days to process. But at least you could get your money back on that. And like I said, I didn't miss that fight. I mean, the main event, like you said, was so good. I really didn't miss it. And I was actually pretty glad to, you know, get out of there as early as we did. I mean, I was at a bar, so it was before last call. It was before closing. I got out of there, so I was happy. So let's shift gears real quick onto, as you mentioned earlier, some news broke about Ariel Helwani being taken off of the press tour for the Floyd Mayweather Conor McGregor fight, and of course he's saying that it was directly related to Dana White saying, "I don't want this guy on the press tour."
I mean, I think he said it was directly related to the UFC. Let's be clear. For legal reasons, I don't think he actually said Dana's name. He said it came directly from the UFC. So I just, you know, I'm the mainstream media guy, so I got to cover my ass here. I don't think he actually said that it came from Dana.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
But we all, like, we can draw conclusions.
Sure, absolutely. But of course, it's not the first time that Dana White and Ariel Helwani have had a run-in. We had him, Ariel Helwani and his team, Esther and Casey, being kicked out of 199. I believe it was 199, correct, in Los Angeles? Yes. And of course, it rears its ugly head again. Apparently, he's been kicked off the press tour. Well, give us your thoughts, because again, like you said, you are mainstream media. If this was you, what would you be doing?
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't know the nature, and I am not about to play devil's advocate because I hate this stuff.
Sure.
Showtime is effectively the promoter. I probably wouldn't have been paying from Showtime to go on the broadcast because he was not kicked off the press tour. I believe he still has credentials to be there. He's just not on their broadcast, right?
Oh, I see.
That was my understanding. So let's be totally clear.
Oh, you know more about it than I do.
I mean, based on Ariel's tweets, which I'd have to go back to read, he was supposed to be on the broadcast. And if I'm wrong with this, and I really should, if I was in front of my computer, I'd be double checking. If he has credentials taken away, that's absolutely insane and, should not be permitted. My understanding was that he was going to be part of the Showtime broadcast for this press tour and was kicked off. Is no longer, doing an on-air role, which, like, it sucks.
Right.
But that is more similar to him losing the Fox job, working for UFC Tonight or whatever, than it is to him having his credentials pulled from 199. I hate this. I hate that these personal vendettas play such a huge role. And it sucks for Ariel. But it's not the same thing as 199. That's all I'm going to say. Because 199, didn't allow him to cover the.
Yeah, I'm looking back in his tweets, and of course I can see him there interviewing Conor McGregor. So obviously he's still allowed to do his job and interview them. That's like you said, he must have been taken off of the on air broadcast, which again sucks. I mean, I don't understand why they keep doing this to him.
Yeah, I mean it's brutal. They just don't like him, right? That's what it comes down to, and I hate the reasons why they don't like him, and all of the usual statements we make about how the UFC wants the media to sort of act as an extension of its PR arm. Ariel also,
right.
I mean, obviously refuses to play by those rules. There's all of that there. I wouldn't go into business with them, right? Like, I wouldn't try to be part of the broadcast team that they officially have out. You gotta play by their rules if you're going to be part of their broadcast. What's disappointing is that the UFC, reached out and wouldn't allow or begged Showtime not to let them do it. I think this is one of those things that sucks and is shitty, but we shouldn't conflate it with what happened at 199 here. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to get you to speak for about 45 seconds here. I just have to make a purchase very quickly, which is terrible radio.
Yeah, you go ahead and I'll talk. That's all right.
Okay.
I'll talk. It's all good. All good. You go ahead and get your frosty beverages. Okay, so yeah.
Thank you very much.
Danny was saying, you're welcome. I guess it's the difference between what happened in UFC 199, and of course, that's a good thing. But if you're the number one journalist in the sport, in my opinion, I do believe that you should be able to take on these high profile. I'm going to put Danny on mute just for a minute because he's getting his stuff done. I think that you should be able to, make money. I mean, they're holding him back, and this is why not only the fighters but the journalists in MMA need a union. And of course, we've talked about the journalist union in the MMA, and I think it's moving forward. That's a good thing. But again, with unions, you need to be able to work with the fight promotion. And I don't know how the journalists are going to get to that point. It seems like a hard road to get from A to B. But again, just like we were talking about earlier on, and I'm going to see if I'm going to bring Danny back off mute to see if he's done. But just like we were saying
it just doesn't
seem to make sense you know, not only for the, you know, bashing your fighters or your champions, but it doesn't make sense to not have, you know, the number one MMA reporter. I mean, let's not mix it both. I mean, he's definitely very popular with the masses. It doesn't make sense to not have him, you know, there as a representative for MMA. I mean, especially in this freak show that we're seeing coming up, it just doesn't make sense not to have him on the broadcast. I have a really hard time wrapping my head around it. But again, it brings us back, Danny. It brings us back to what's going on with Dana White. I mean, has he gotten to a point where he's just, you know, has no touch with the reality anymore? I mean, is it just about, I mean, we know it's about, you know, trying to bury his enemies. We've seen that in the past, but what do you think it is all of a sudden? Because his name keeps coming up, or do you think he just keeps wanting to have his name in the news?
I mean, I don't think with Dana it has anything to do with him wanting to keep his name in the news. You know, there's a lot, you can look at a lot of different explanations. I imagine that Dana has taken on a fair amount of personal risk with this Conor fight. I imagine that this was not something that the new owners were particularly, like, you know, I don't want to say particularly comfortable with, as in they were. I imagine that there were a lot of sort of very subtle things that need to happen in order for it to go forward. And I can't imagine that the new owners were fully aware of how to make those things work. So my guess is that this is kind of Dana's baby a little bit, which I think is part of why he's so heavily involved in promoting it and possibly in just making sure that everyone knows what a brilliant star Conor is for the UFC. Not that we don't, but, you know, it could be why he's bashing other fighters and lifting Conor up and saying, you know, Conor's the perfect example of everything the UFC stands for. I don't know. That's where I sort of lean.
Oh, that's a good point.
As for how this relates to, you know, Ariel, it's personal between those two, clearly. I said, I do think that I fully get. I mean, not that I have a ton of time off on Mondays these days, but if I do, you know, I always, you know, I make a point of listening to absolutely as much of the MMA as I can. It's essential listening both for reporters and fans. I have a lot of respect for the job Ariel's done. I don't know if I would take a gig working for Showtime on this one.
Sure.
And I'm saying I know, like, very clearly, I don't know what I would do in that situation. But this is one of those things that I think is probably a bigger deal to fans than it is to me and the media. I kind of saw it, and I have a couple group chats going with other reporters, all of whom you know. And there was kind of a sense of, like, shit, like, really this happened? Like, really the UFC is allowing this bad press to happen? But I also didn't necessarily sit there and be like, I wasn't outraged. Knowing how media works, you know, I've certainly had media organizations restrict what I can do, you know, based on my relationship with them. I've had lots of sports teams do that. This isn't, I don't think that this is a particularly big, egregious violation. It's just that we know it's personal.
Okay.
It's the personal nature of it that bugs me. And so I don't know, man. Maybe Dana, as I was saying, like, maybe Dana is just, you know, stressed out. He's got the new owners breathing down his neck, being like, man, you're letting our biggest star go do this. What if he doesn't come back? What if he doesn't this and that? Dana's got to try to keep Conor happy, make him feel loved, butter him up. I don't know. But, I don't know if that was a fully coherent thought, but it's a bunch of different thoughts mashed into one.
Okay, so I kind of broached the subject about the MMA Journalists Association.
Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on that? And what are your thoughts on – yes, sir. And what are your thoughts on it succeeding? Like, do you think the UFC is going to allow this to happen? Or what do we have to do to get this – because we heard Dan Stubb talk on MMA Junkie about, you know, the challenges. And of course, we heard Chad Gundis talk about the challenges on his podcast, the co-main event. So what do you think about the, first of all, the Journalists Association? I think we've talked about this before also, but how hard is it to, will it to be to get these, to get the UFC to talk to them, basically?
I mean, let's start, first of all, like, I mean, the first step is going to be getting everyone on the same page. And I think if some of my colleagues in the media can get their heads out of their asses, it shouldn't be that much of an effort. This is such a no-brainer for us. And, you know, I've debated a number of other people in the media publicly on it, and I will continue to do so. I think there are a lot of people who, I mean, there's just some assholes who I'm not going to waste my time saying their names, who are coming out and being critical of this.
Sure.
The people who did it, I believe, are doing it for the right reasons. I think that there are obviously questions about how it's going to operate. We have a meeting in Anaheim, which I'm proud to say that I will be a part of, and I will be at, and I will pay my dues in advance. There are a lot of people who it's just like, it's easy to question and say like, oh, well, it couldn't work for this reason or it couldn't work for that reason. But also, like, it could work for a lot of reasons. And the easy thing to do is appear smart by being a skeptic. The hard thing to do is to buy in right now. I've told the story. I, at UFC 208, or no, 209, was shocked to find out that Megan O'Leary was going to be doing all the interviews at Open Workouts. Which means that on the Wednesday, the only quotes that I'm going to have access to, asked by a UFC employee. I'm not using those. I will never use those.
Right.
That is literally just quoting UFC PR staff effectively. Love Megan, admire her work. She's not doing my job. So all of a sudden, I paid for a hotel and a flight to get there on Tuesday, and I get no access to my own content or my own questions, or to ask like questions that I think are important in advance. So I went on Twitter and I kind of blasted the UFC about it, and a bunch of other media people saw it and got mad. But I had to take a certain amount of personal risk and professional risk in order to fight. And like, to be clear, I do make an effort to not just ask the easy, obvious questions to promote a fight. I really, really do try to write stories that I think are pertinent, and that, you know, allow the fans to be educated about what's going on. So I did that, and it worked out, and they switched it up. But then I saw 213. What happened on the Wednesday? Megan O'Leary was asking all the questions again. So, and I'm only flying in from Calgary when I'm going into Vegas. There are people flying in from all over the world, and they're basically wasting 18 months, or at least if they're good reporters. So that's the type of thing where, you know, we can demand at the beginning of every fight week that we at least get a media scrum with the fighters who are doing it. That's a small difference, but it makes a world of difference for me and my coverage. So, and I think, will the UFC, you know, the quote, the whole conglomerate, listen to us? I don't know, but I know Lene. I knew Schaller. I think that they're willing to listen to our requests and listen to specific, you know, to the representatives of an organization that come and talk about our needs and talk about, you know, the issues that we need to see addressed. So I'm very optimistic about this. And I think that if you're the public, it will result in better coverage. You were asked to, you know, basically say that you will not, and I believe it's have not, but also just will not, you know, accept money from a promoter to cover an event. So there's also like a level of accountability for reporters that, you know, readers will get. So, I mean, all the reasons why reporters are saying, oh, we don't want to do a part of this are based on hypotheticals. And yeah, all the positives are a little bit hypothetical as well. But I just don't see a single reason not to give it a shot if you are a reporter and you care about your coverage.
And I just want to go on record, as DJ Tony did, and say that we are in full support of this 100%. And of course, if Danny, if you could sneak me into your luggage to get down to Anaheim so I can get access to said meeting, I would appreciate that, because anyways, I won't go any further. We'll talk about that off
I will air. Not but can I get another commitment from you, just real quick, on the topic of Anaheim? I am flying directly back directly back to Toronto instead of Calgary after Anaheim. And I'm in and around your part of the world for about 2 weeks, so we should try to record, you know, in person over frosty beverages, and you know, give the people something fun, and you know, rather than us over the phone. So, all right, let's make sure we do.
I think we can make that happen, and we can probably do a video a component if you wanted to. Yeah, I think that sounds like a good
idea. Down as hell, buddy.
All right, so let's
down as hell.
Let's I think Danny, I think we'd get along just fine, just so you know. Let's move on real quickly to another thing that kind of stuck in my craw a little bit, Gegard Mousasi. And I said this, the second topic that we were going to talk about is how the UFC is no longer interested in being the best fight the best. And I think that the Ben Folks article, the article that Ben Folks put out on this, was very, very pertinent to the issue. I mean, this is a top ranked guy. I mean, and he's not. It's not as if he's not exciting. It's not as if he hasn't been starting to come into his own and starting to do the media and figuring it out. I just don't understand why the UFC would want to let somebody like Gegard Mousasi, who seems to be coming into his prime. Like I said, not only in the cage, but also, you know, dealing with the media, and just let them go, him go to the competitor. Now, of course, I Gegard wanted the money. He wanted them to show him the money, just like Jerry Maguire. But apparently they were not willing to show him the money, and now he's off the Bellator, and his Dave and Buster's free tickets, you know, they kick in right away.
Man, I think this sucks for the UFC. I think this sucks for fans who wanted to see Mousasi fight. Yeah. You know, like, I'm sure they had the reasons. I'm sure they had, you know, ways of, you know, metrics that they used to determine whether to match the price or whatever. And it's possible that this is just one of those ones where Viacom came in over the top and, you know, they said, hey, we want this guy. We've got an opportunity at this guy. But Mousasi's good and he's fun. And as you said, he's good with the media. You can, you know, fight him in Europe. Forget everything else. Forget, you know, the politics of it, which I can kind of get into because I don't know if you, like, you follow soccer at all. But, like, back, like, mid-2000s, Manchester City got bought by big owners. And everyone was like, well, players aren't going to want to go play in Manchester for City when United's there. United's already the big spenders. And then it turns out that when you're owned by, like, the Sheikh of Qatar, I forget exactly who does it. That's probably, I probably shouldn't have said that because that actually is borderline offensive for me to just forget and assume. But it was a powerful royal family from that part of the world. And they bought it. Turns out when you have the money, eventually piece by piece, these players started going to Manchester City, and you know, 4 or 5 years later, they were winning the title in the Premier League. And that sort of feels like what's happening with Bellator right now, because I don't think losing Mousasi on his own, I mean, it just sucks for fans. It sucks for people who want to see him fight Yoel Romero or Luke Rockhold or any of these guys, but it's just another piece. And it is starting to add up. You know, you look at the Rory McDonalds, you look at the Ryan Baders, you look at the building, like it really, really is adding up to something major. And yes, I saw that tweet about, you know, it's still 85% of the top fighters based on certain metrics are in the UFC and all of that. But it was probably only 90 5 years ago or 3 years ago. And when you get down to the point where it's maybe 25% of the best fighters in the world are Bellator, it only makes the decision easier to go and get that extra $10,000-$20,000 a fight. So, I mean, I was shocked that they let him go because the optics aren't great. And it's a real top guy in the middleweight division who potentially, if that division hadn't been held up as awfully as it has been over the last year and a bit, would have already fought for a title recently and could have possibly been champion.
Yeah. I just fact-checked for you, Sheikh Mansour of the Abu Dhabi United Group. So you were on the right pace there. You were on the right direction of the City Football Group, the ownership. It's in my opinion, to date, I mean, this I think this one is bigger than Rory. I do because, you know, he was ranked number 4. Like you said, should have probably, and that was in the UFC's own rankings.
should never have been, you know, should have fought for a title, should never have been in negotiations. You know, the UFC, if they were interested in having the best, should just be keeping this guy. I mean, it's sad, and this I'm pulling this directly from Ben Folk's article. This is not my words. It is sad that they were willing to pay a professional wrestler who had zero MMA fights all the money they paid him, and they're not willing to pay Gegard Mousasi, the number four ranked fighter in their own rankings. Really,
so,
really sad.
Question, can I just ask something? Really, really sad. I agree. I don't know, this is useless, but just, you know, we're both fans. Had the ref not screwed up the Weidman-Mousasi fight, and had that just been a clean finish?
Right.
Do you think we're seeing Mousasi still in the UFC? Or do you think it's just like the ref screwed it up?
Oh, of course. Of course we did.
That's brutal.
I was there live. I was at 210. And it was brutal. It was a shit show, to be honest with you. And it's they're taking money out of this guy's pocket. I mean, he's the glory and the fame that you know, the ref, I think with Dan Mergliata, unfortunately, but a mistake. It can take money out of and prestige out of the fighter's pocket. It's crazy.
Crazy, because he has a clean win over Weidman there, and, like, we might not be looking at Romero Whitaker this July. You know, they might have been
you're right.
Mousasi in there instead, and then, you know, they're not cutting the number one contender. I mean, the whole thing changes if the ref makes the right call there. It's brutal.
Yeah, it was brutal. But again, I mean, he was dealing with the change in rules. I mean, I want to give the ref the benefit of the doubt, obviously, you know, the changing of rules and I, you know, whether or not the fighters understand. And we've had this conversation before about the fighters not really understanding what the new rules imply or entail. You know, they do get told the rules before they go out to the cage, but we still see people grabbing. Just this weekend, we saw somebody grab the top of the cage so that he didn't get taken down. And guess what? He didn't get penalized. You know, so it's, I don't know, man. It's, the sport is.
Yeah, I mean, and to be clear, I'm not like getting,
George.
I'm not trying to rekindle, you know, the flames of anger about that decision. I'm just playing what if. And in part, because I don't know.
Sure.
I mean, Spencer
Kite,
who does the Vancouver Province thing, did a great piece about how different the middleweight division might have been had Whitaker and Bisping not been canceled 2 years ago. And I just thought it was a fun piece. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't trying to say anything other than just speculate and have fun. And that's kind of how I look at this Mousasi thing. It's like, just imagine what a different world we might be talking about had that not happened. Like, forget the anger about it. Just, you know, it's brutal, because I genuinely think that probably Whitaker doesn't get slotted in against Romero. They probably do Mousasi Romero, right?
Yeah. Agreed.
Just plays out differently.
Just for anybody listening, if you're not familiar with who Spencer Kite is, we did interview him a while back. It's in the archives. Please go back and check it out, because he is an interesting dude, and of course, Canadian. So let's talk about the article a little bit, because, you know, Whitaker did say that himself in the post fight, and I thought, again, that was an interesting angle, that this fight was already supposed to happen and it fell out. Now Bisping has no choice, except, of course, to fight GSP. But if we believe what Dana White says, and of course we don't believe anything Dana White says anymore, that fight's not going to happen. So Bisping is going to fight Whitaker, and it is kind of crazy how Whitaker had to, you know, fight his way back up to that fight, because Bisping is the champion. And I'll get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Robert Whitaker is the next unified middleweight champion, but I mean, again, I don't think I need to repeat what you just said too much, but credit to Spencer, because anytime I read, you know, a story by a writer that I'm like, ah, man, that's a good angle, I want to shout them out. So Spencer wrote that before Whitaker talked about it, and it was fully something that he'd clearly thought about.
Oh, okay,
Just kind of wrote it and really looked into it. He talked about Bisping you know, Bisping probably doesn't get the Silva fight. He's probably not ready for the Silva fight headlining in London if he fights Whitaker, because, you know, one way or another, even if Bisping wins, he's probably beat up enough that he's not fighting, what, 2.5, 3 months later, because they were supposed to fight on the Rousey home card, right?
Correct, yeah.
Correct, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think for all of us, I mean, like, just style of fight, size of fighter, you know, the power that middleweights have, all of that. I really like middleweight as a weight class in MMA. And that's why I think this, the Bisping stuff, not all of which has been his fault, but it's why the Bisping stuff's been so frustrating, because I love that weight class. And it, it was exciting to see, you know, this up and coming guy in Whitaker. And as you said, he had to earn his way to get this Romero fight, and then had to fight Yoel freaking Romero. You got to respect it. And it's just nice to have a little bit of clarity, to know that these guys are fighting. I will, and I try not to do the whole outraged by every little thing. I will be so mad if they do Bisping GSP now, after all the goodwill that they've accrued by with Whitaker. And I've interviewed Robert Whitaker many times. I didn't know he had it in him to be that charming, man. Like, he was great. Bisping came in, did that whole stupid thing with throwing the belt on the ground. I felt bad for Whitaker, because Whitaker was doing a great job, you know, shoving his corner off as they tried to put the shirt on, and he was really charming afterwards. He just showed a side of himself that I hadn't seen and that I really enjoyed. And he's, you know, he seems like one of the good guys in the sport, and is another one of these just new generation guys who has a little bit of everything, but is so dangerous and, you know, just fitness through the roof. So ultimately, like, I'd love to see Luke Rockhold get back in there. I wish Nusasi was still fighting in there, but we've got a little movement in middleweight for the first time in God knows how long, ages. And, man, it's nice to have that division back on the radar a little bit. That's I don't know if that's the most insightful thing I've ever said, but I'm just like, I just, light heavyweight has been sort of bogged down by the same three guys for so long, and all of John Jones' stuff. That's probably my favorite weight class when it's going good. But middleweight's a close second through all the Anderson Silva stuff. It just holds this kind of special place in my heart. So it's just nice to, you know that we're actually going to be getting title fights against top contenders again.
Yeah, and just to touch on Whitaker, you know, I've been following him since, you know, he was in Tough, and I've always kind of took a shine to him, because I do have family over in not only the UK, but I have family in Australia as well, and, you know, just kind of had a special place for him. And just to see his ascent and you know, the age that he is at, and just to see him, first of all, take out Jacare, and then to take out Romero in the fashion that he did. And let's kind of get into the fight a little bit here, because we are swiftly running out of time, and there's a couple of more things that I want to talk about. And I do want to address the performance by Whitaker, but just to see the heart and everything that he went through in that fight, because he was down two rounds, also fighting on one leg. So I throw it to you. Impressive performance. Let's talk a little bit about that fight and kind of break it down a bit.
Well, I mean, I think obviously the main thing, and I mean, the main thing is the fact that, you know, his leg was so fucked, and he fought through it. I mean, you talked about the heart.
Yeah.
He also, I mean, like, Robert Whitaker is a guy who has seemed, I mean, you go back to the Brunson fight. I think that's who it is. He kind of just ran at him, and Whitaker was like, all right, well, I'll fight that fight. The Jacare fight, he fought so smart. He's kind of able to fight whatever anyone's fighting. And that's not what he wanted to do against Romero, but he did so well just to weather the storm. And even when he was down 2-0, you knew Romero was going to fade a little bit, and he sort of had the composure to not freak out and do anything dumb in that third round. And I mean, I don't know what to say. Like, his everything about him is, you know, his takedown defense is incredible. He can absolutely just take your head off with one punch, but that's not all he has. I wouldn't describe him as being a knockout artist. I think that fight has been broken down, but here I was criticizing Dana White. The best thing Dana White said is, he's like, normally Dana doesn't like, you know, 5-round title fights all that much, But with that one, you know, you would have taken an extra five if you could. Those guys were just, you know, it was such an interesting fight. And they both had to dig so deep in that fifth round. I mean, they both had taken damage. And credit to Whitaker, man, like on one leg, clearly in a lot of pain. He just went so far beyond what I thought he was capable of at this age. And admittedly, I want to be clear, I was in Africa when he fought Jacare, so I didn't see that fight live at the time. So by the time I was watching it, I knew what happened. But at the time, I thought that was a really, really bad fight for Whitaker. I thought for sure Jacare was going to be winning that one, and he's beaten everybody. I mean, make a compelling case that someone else is the best middleweight in the world right now. I think it's impossible.
Well, I mean, you can't make the case that Bisping's the number one middleweight in the world. I mean, and with the two fights that he was trying to get, you know, previously, he didn't want to fight the number one contenders at all. And I guess that's why Jacare had to fall off. And of course, I was with you on this one. I thought Romero, you know, it was a very tough test, but I did pick in my pool. Apparently I put Romero, which was a mistake. I must've been drunk and loaded while I was doing that. But, very, very impressive performance. And I thought, you know, Whitaker was able to take Yoel where he needed to take him. You know what I mean? Stay away from him, even with that bum leg. Keep throwing it. The amazing thing was that he kept throwing that leg. I thought, wow, amazing. You know, front kicks, keeping it at distance. And again, that's what he did with Jacare as well. And it just kept him where he needed him to be. The Bronson fight, like you said, a little bit crazier, but came out on the top. Now let's talk about crazy fights and guys having to withstand an actual beating. Let's go into the Johnson versus Gaethje fight, because to me, not Dana White was the number one story coming out of International Fight Week. Number two was Whitaker. Number three was Gaethje versus Johnson, or Johnson versus Gaethje, as it was on the bill. This fight was incredible. I have watched it numerous times now, and our boy Jim from England, Jim Edwards, right? Am I getting it right?
You got it right.
No, I'm not getting it right. Yeah, okay, yeah.
No, you are. It's Jim Edwards.
Jim's great, by the way. He's a wonderful dude. He put out a little tweet, you know, putting whose stock went up and whose stock went down. I thought that tweet was sweet. And, you know, I don't think Johnson's stock went down at all. I mean, he looked really, really good. Unfortunately, he got dragged into a brawl, which I don't think that you have any option of not getting dragged into with Gaethje, as I saw him in the UFC on the biggest stage. And he gave everything he had, and then he just, you know, ended up getting caught. And what a wonderful fight, and probably fight of the year. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, Michael Johnson finished Gaethje. It's just Gaethje can't be finished.
Right.
I was watching. I mean, like, I had to watch the replay because I, as you know, I cover CFL. So I was just sitting there, just in pain.
Sure.
Watching everyone react to that fight on Twitter and just being like, oh my God, I gotta see this. And then it was one of those fights where you go home and, you know, MMA fans and MMA media and pretty much anyone who watches fights has a tendency to, you know, overreact to things as they're happening. And I watched that fight and I was like, man, like, I'm glad I wasn't on Twitter, because I would look like an idiot going crazy for that one. Like Michael Johnson, just, I mean, you know, not every fighter is going to be a champion. Not every fighter needs to be a champion. Michael Johnson's had some bad losses. You know, the Nate Diaz fight was not very good. But yeah, he went in there, did everything you could ask for him, put on an entertaining fight. He just fought a man who, like, I don't understand how Gaethje's body works. Like, I don't understand how you can take what Gaethje took in that first round and keep going. I mean, it was just it was a masterclass. And the thing is that I sit here and I'm like, okay, well, who do you put Gaethje up against next? Everyone clearly wants either Eddie Alvarez or Kevin Lee is really lobbying, and Kevin Lee would be a whole lot of fun. But
absolutely.
I mean, there's this part of me that's like, well, he can't take this much damage for that many times. So, you know, this guy can't stick around, but he has, you know, I know Dustin Gaethje. I've watched a lot of his fights, but I went back and started watching them all over again. I'm like, I think Deadspin called him the crown prince of violence. And that's exactly what he is. Right. Both of these guys just went in there and just, you know, they put on a high school fight for us, except it was the best high school fight I've ever seen. And they actually knew how to fight. They both took damage. They both took risks in order to land big shots. They both got caught, and they both showed a lot of heart to keep going. But holy shit, I can't wait to see whoever doesn't like that guy in one fight just proved that he cannot miss for every UFC fight he has for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing that I was really impressed with him as well was in the post-fight press conference. You know, he has said it before. He said it before in the World Series of Fighting and interviews, you know, previous to his UFC tenure. He cannot do this forever. He knows that. And, you know, but he isn't, like you said, he's an entertainer, and he's going to continue to entertain. And I think that pressure that he puts on, and of course, and I just want to put a disclaimer out there, because I was – I was very, very, I didn't know if he was going to be able to compete in the UFC, but I mean, just seeing what happened in this fight, I'm convinced, and I'm looking forward to what he's got for in the future. But I think the Eddie Alvarez fight, again, they're talking about putting them on the Ultimate Fighter, and I just don't want to see Gaethje on the shelf for that long. You know what I'm saying, Danny? I just don't want to see that. So, I mean, just give him another fight. And we want to see this guy against Conor McGregor. I mean, he pretty much sold that fight to me because of his stature, his fighting style. That's the fight I want to see. I don't want to see him again against Eddie Alvarez. I really don't.
I want to be clear. I want to see him against Kevin Lee
again. I think that's a good fight in the interim. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'll be honest. So if I was just playing it, like if I was playing matchmaker, I would prefer to see Alvarez Poirier again, and then to actually just kind of like resolve that. And then I would probably go. Yeah, I'd go get you Kevin Lee, and then, you know, you do. Clearly, they're leaning towards Tony Khabib, and the winner of that getting Conor, and then, you know, the winner of the Kevin Lee Gaethje fight gets Conor, whatever, or Conor, whoever wins those ones. I mean, I think there's a pecking order here. You definitely don't just throw Gaethje in at Conor right away.
Yeah,
I know that you could. It would be wild.
I can see them doing it, though. I can see the UFC doing them. I can see them doing it.
There's too many guys ahead of him. There's too many guys ahead of him. He's got to earn it.
I know. I
want him to earn it.
I want him to earn it, too. I want him to earn it, too. But that, I'm not at the driver's seat of the UFC. And I can see them doing it. I mean, they've done Conor McGregor versus fucking Floyd Mayweather. So, anyways. Do you have anything else to say about
that?
Very
good point. No, just, I mean, it's exciting. I mean, we talked about Musashi leaving, and, you know, it's so easy to just be critical, but credit to them for getting Gaethje in. You know, they got the right guy, and they lost one great fighter. They brought another one. It's not a like-for-like replacement. I'm not trying to make that argument, but if I'm going to criticize them for losing Musashi, I got to criticize them for bringing in arguably the most exciting fighter at that weight class and debatably of all weight classes in the world. So, get him to Edmonton, man. Get him on that Edmonton card somehow. That's only a couple hours of drive for me, man. That'll keep the people happy.
Well, I think it's amazing how, like you brought up Musashi, I just think it's amazing how they're willing to pay Gaethje the money they paid him, and they're not willing to negotiate with Gegard Musashi. But here's a quick question before we get out of here. International Fight Week, it was a whole week. Did you have any stories that you thought that we haven't already talked about coming out of International Fight Week that you wanted to talk about at all?
I mean, I have more like little comments. I gotta say, man, I thought Chad Laprise's call out of Mickey Gall was pretty awesome. Chad Laprise is a guy I got a lot of time for, and you know, has taken some tough fights on short notice. So just if we're talking about Canadians, obviously Jordan Mean and Elias Theodoro did not have particularly good. Well, I mean, Theodoro didn't look bad. He lost the fight. It's not the end of the world. They lost the fight, but but it was nice to see a Canadian and Laprise win. I think anyone who seriously reported that, you know, the UFC was looking at doing Joanna against Shevchenko, you know, they shouldn't have their credentials taken away, but they need to give themselves a serious look if they call themselves a journalist. I'll also say that, like, man, International Fight Week, it brings out the weirdest shit in reporters. And just being in these group chats, and there was, you know, one guy who accused Brad Okamoto on Twitter. I don't know what the guy's name is. I don't follow him. But this guy had written a story about Gaethje in 2014 and accused Okamoto of plagiarism because the story was sort of similar. It was like, man, some reporters just, you know me, when I drink, I try to stay off Twitter, and sometimes I do, and most of the time I just end up like posting videos of myself singing songs and stuff. But some people,
oh, that was
like,
great, by the way.
So much. Well, you know what? I had fun with it. To be clear, I'm actually not embarrassed about that. I basically, on Canada Day, me and my buddy Shane decided to do Canadian music karaoke. Yeah, we had a good time, and you know, we had a couple drinks. We weren't bombed, but turned out that I don't know the words to Northern Touch as badly or as well as I do. I also got to say, why has no Canadian fighter just chosen Northern Touch as their walk-in song? Maybe I'm missing some
best song.
Like,
I love
that.
It
seems like such an obvious song to just walk into. But yeah, I mean, some reporters, man, like the amount of just drama you had with reporters taking shots at each other, and it's like just over the pettiest shit. And it's like, Brett Okamoto is not plagiarizing your stuff, man. Like, relax. I don't know. I just like International Fight Week. I wasn't there this week. I'm going to Anaheim. Hopefully I'll be there for Conor Floyd, and I'll definitely be there for Edmonton. You know, it's going to be fun. I wasn't there, and to be honest, I didn't really regret it, although I would have loved to cover Gaethje Johnson, obviously. But I don't know, it was a weird International Fight Week. You'd agree with that? It didn't have the same...
It was.
You know, it was... And this is what happens when you stack a bunch of cards with three title fights. I mean, you're going to get good cards, you're going to get bad cards. But I will say that it feels a little bit like... maybe we're not on blockbuster Conor levels the way we were, Conor Ronda levels the way we were the last couple of years, but certainly feels like we have less to complain about now than we did over the winter with fighting. It feels like we're a little bit back on track right now, and that's a good feeling.
Right. And one thing that I wanted to touch on, it, I guess the International Fight Week curse did strike again. I thought it was very interesting that, you know, 3 years in a row we've had pretty much the same thing happened, some kind of fight dropping off, high profile. I thought it was interesting and, you know, kind of crazy. But one last thing before I let you go, Travis Brown, go.
I mean, it's the guy's got to go. You know, you got to be cautious because, you know, there's guys like Anthony Pettis who I thought it was time for them to leave. I'll say that I think right now, for their own good, the two fighters who I don't think really should be in the UFC, who are big names and have had good careers, are Travis Brown and Johnny Hendricks. You know, Travis put together a good career, but he's taking a lot of damage. And for his own good, man, you're fighting at heavyweight. I don't know. I mean, he's not getting knocked out always every time. But the fact of the matter is the guy's just not putting in good performances, and he's finding ways to lose. You know, certainly if I think he was in any other division, he'd be cut. And it was, again, like Dana actually said some things I agreed with, and him just being open about he thought it's time for Travis Brown to walk away from the fight game. So do I. And, you know, I was really high on Travis Brown a couple of years ago. But he doesn't have it anymore. And when you're a big man fighting other big men, you got to do it smart. You're marrying a, you know, great, presumably pretty well-off athlete. Travis Brown's probably made a whole lot of money in his career. Walk away before anything too serious happens to you, man. Do it for your own good. Do it for your kids. you know, do it for your own health. And, you know, it's, there's no shame in being done with fighting, and it's time for Travis Brown to hang up the gloves for sure.
All right, Danny, we're going to end the show. You have yourself a great night.
Peace.
You enjoy your frosty beverages.
Thanks for having me on, man.
And again, let's make that happen after Anaheim, please.
We're doing it, buddy. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right. You're welcome. Have a great night. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Danny Austin coming at us live and direct. Walking the streets, Calgary, getting himself a beverage. There it is. Got to have that drop. Well, another great show in the book, guys. I mean, this one got a little bit more technical, like my Proteus's primetime shows do. But I think it's very important for us as MMA fans to keep ourselves educated, keep ourselves speaking to the, you know, the journalists and the people who are on the cutting edge of the sport and get their opinion on what's happening, you know, not just what the mainstream or the state-run television wants us to hear. And I am apparently on my soapbox, so I will just try and calm down. But I do think it's important for us to get out of our bubble, get out of our own heads, and look at some other ideas that we may not have thought of. And I think Danny's a pretty cool dude, and he's got his head in the right place. He's a great journalist, and it's always good to have his opinion. Again, you can follow Danny Austin at DannyAustin_9. And as he had said, he is covering the CFL right now. He is the beat reporter for the Calgary Stampeders, for, as I said earlier, the Calgary Sun and the Herald. So, guys, that's going to do it for me. I believe we have a Smack My Picks Up edition tomorrow, being Wednesday, the 12th. Or I believe we have a Sunday show coming up. I have not looked ahead yet to in the schedule, but I do believe we'll have a show tomorrow. I have not talked to Tony either. He has been very, very busy. And thank you very much, Tony, for putting yesterday's show up. I thought that we owed it to the fans, to or the listeners, to have a show in place because we did not have a Sunday show. Proteus's primetime show happened on Tuesday this week, not on Thursday. So Wednesday's show will be the last show of this particular week until Sunday when we, or I guess it'll be Monday when we recap. So thank you all very much for tuning in. I hope that you all enjoy my intellectual chats with Danny Austin. And of course, we're going to try and make something happen in person because I would love to meet him. Follow us at Another MMA Cast. And as I was saying to our boy Schick Swizz, or Swizz Schick, yeah, I can't say it right now. Quick Shiz, there it is. We are on Google Play. We are on Stitcher. All y'all need to do is just search us. We're there. We're also on iTunes. We're on YouTube. We're a little bit slow uploading onto YouTube, but it just takes a while. And we're doing a lot of things, and we're in a lot of places. Follow all of our contributors. First of all, Marco from Waco, Texas, at Maldo Marco. Sam from North Carolina. You saw her all week. Her show yesterday, we interviewed her. She had a crazy weekend in Vegas at Pandora Box. Follow the big boss man at I'm DJ Tony. And please follow me at TROADOS. Thank you all very much for listening. I have been Proteus. I will try and find the drop because I've been talking. Have yourselves a great night. I love y'all. Peace.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Sorry I'm late. I just don't give a fuck.